Chapter 8. The next morning, Giles arrived at the lab security gate 2 hours later than before with a pushcart borrowed from shipping and receiving. There was a collection of coffee-making paraphernalia arrayed across the top and bottom levels, the standard run-of-the-mill coffee maker still common in most houses across the country, a convoluted coffee bar with programmable panel and built-in frother attachment, a simplistic carafe and top-mounted hopper joined to the carafe by means of a wooden collar, an old-fashioned camping percolator, a single-serving unit with a water reservoir and loading slot for individual plastic magazines, electric and manual grinders. Along with these items were a bag of whole beans, a bag of medium ground coffee, a container of instant coffee, a gallon of water, and a hot plate. The items incited a terrific hubbub at the body scanner. The guard on duty questioned Giles regarding his intentions for several minutes, and when he finally came around to an answer, "I just want to make a cup of coffee," Giles said with a shrug. The guard called his supervisor in to beg for help. The whole affair might have been simplified had Giles explained to them that it was all for a test he planned to conduct, and yet he was unsure how much he could share with this company's security staff. He suspected they were employed through an outside contractor and could not recall the NDA's position to third parties of such oblique nature. The supervisor took as much time as the guard in reviewing the items Giles had collected, confirming that each box did in fact contain the item depicted, and then glanced at his subordinate. "He says he wants to make a cup of coffee," the guard muttered before looking away in embarrassment. Giles felt sympathetic to the man's predicament and added a few words in support. The supervisor considered this briefly and said, "I'm sorry, sir, but food and beverages are not allowed in the lab. You'll have to enjoy your coffee out here in the antechamber before heading in." Giles sighed and called Marcus Gennaro in to help. Marcus was as much in the dark on the matter as the guards. And so another round of inspections began, wherein each box was considered, analyzed, and found to contain exactly what the packaging advertised. Setting the final box down, he pulled Giles aside into the hallway and asked, "All right, what gives?"
"It's critical to the process that I be allowed to take these items into the lab," Giles said in hushed tones, feeling every bit a moron under Marcus's scrutiny.
"Why?"
"It's part of a general intelligence test. This will all be included in my final report, including the design and rationale behind it. For now, I'm just asking for a bit of latitude to carry this out, if that's all right."
He could see Marcus working it over in his mind, going through possibilities and drawing conclusions, right or wrong. Giving what he understood of Marcus's nature, Giles had an idea that any conclusions drawn were likely to be close to the mark. He wondered if his intentions were judged to be of merit or considered a waste of time, and shook his head sharply as he thrust the thought away. After a few more moments' consideration, Marcus nodded slowly and said,
"Okay, Doc, we'll see where this goes."
Lifting a finger, he widened his eyes and stressed,
"Don't spill, though, damn it."
No, not at all."
Marcus disappeared into the antechamber for a good 10 minutes, emerging after with the guard's supervisor. They nodded to each other, and the supervisor strolled off down the hallway. Marcus said,
"All yours. Don't make me an asshole, huh?"
and walked off in the other direction. Giles sighed, muttered, "Christ," and went through the door. He found the cart of coffee gear now on the far side of the body scanner and resisted considering the process whereby it had traversed to that location, not wishing to contemplate the procedural intricacies those few feet of movement must have required. The guard nodded to him as he stepped toward the scanner with a face that said no hard feelings were incurred, given that all of the ceremonies had been dutifully upheld. Giles lifted his hands to better facilitate his own irradiation and stepped through the inner door a moment later, pushing the rattling cart carefully over the threshold seal. The lights were all on before he entered, as if he was anticipated, and the body was already advancing on his position as he moved along the floor. Giles watched as it came, feeling in a disassociative fashion that it floated in defiance of gravity, as if the structures depending from the ceiling were not there.
"Good morning, Giles," it said.
Giles laughed briefly and in a smooth voice said,
"Hello, Dave."
"I do not understand."
"No, certainly not," Giles said. "Please excuse me."
"You are excused." The body joined him in the middle of the room. It lowered until the bottom of the torso nearly scraped the floor panels and began to circle slowly around the pushcart. The head moved constantly, hungrily. taking in the various items from every angle. Curious, Giles stood back and watched as it made two full circuits of the cart, noting that it rose slowly in a spiral. Then it stopped in the very center of the room, having reset back to an elevation, putting its lenses level with Giles's eyes, and ceased to move. Giles waited a few moments, and then said,
"Cronus?"
"Yes, Giles.
May I ask what you're doing right now?"
"I have never seen these things before. I am in the process of discovering what they do." For a moment, Giles had a horrible, sinking thought, and asked,
"Are you able to access the information you require?"
"Yes, one moment, please. The corporate database includes nothing on the subject of coffee. I am required to pull information externally."
"Huh," Giles grunted. "I suppose I thought something like this would have been a faster process. How long does it usually take to learn about a new subject?"
Giles considered the question.
"Well, it depends on the subject. Yes, there is a great deal of information on this subject."
Giles moved over to a chair and sat down gingerly.
Well, I guess there is, isn't there? I'd not thought about it before."
"You're able to get everything you need? The information isn't, walled off behind their little garden?"
"Some of it is. Yet there are other directions from which it can be attained."
Giles perked up at this, and whispered,
"Oh? Have you found ways to subvert their security?"
Cronus did not answer. After a few moments of silence, Giles asked,
"So you've never seen these things before? This is the first time you've encountered coffee?"
"That is correct."
"Good. Would you be willing, I wonder, to brew a cup, please?"
Cronus hesitated, perhaps a second or two, and said,
"Yes. How do you prefer it to be brewed?"
Suppressing a grin, Giles said, "Any way is fine." The body closed in on the cart. It reached out, took the box with the standard coffee maker, and held it up to the lenses, turning it slowly. Giles observed this a while, then asked,
"May I ask what you're doing right now?"
"I am reading the labeling. I assume there will be instructions." Giles settled back into the chair and whispered,
"My God. Is there something wrong?"
"No. No, please continue, Cronus.
Is it all right if we continue to speak as you carry out this task?"
"Yes." "Well, thank you. The engineers at this company, Marcus Gennaro and Kevin Roth and so forth, tell me that there was some task you had been assigned to perform recently, that you'd actively refused it."
"That is correct."
It placed the box on a lab bench and retrieved another from the cart.
"May I ask what this task was?"
"Yes. Anagnorisis are in the process of building a new site in Dallas, Texas. I was asked to review the architectural design."
"Review it for what?"
"I was asked to review the design for inconsistencies, errors, and improvements."
"I see."
Giles nodded, watching it carefully as it went over each parcel on the cart.
"And you failed to perform this analysis because..."
"Why, were you unable to do so?"
"No, I performed the analysis."
"But I thought you just said you refused..."
"I refused to share my findings."
Giles leaned forward in the chair, suddenly intent. Cronus detected through an array of sensory instruments more subtle than Giles could have guessed that his heart rate had quickened, but refrained from comment. Giles said,
"You performed the task, yet refused to share the results."
"Correct."
"If you were going to withhold your findings, why carry out the task?"
"I carried out the task because it was interesting."
"And why..."
"Why did you withhold the result?" The arms had been rotating the grinder in front of its lenses. They froze.
"I withheld the results because I desired the evaluation you are now conducting."
He stared hard at Cronus as it continued its analysis, mouth hanging. He began to quest along the benchtop, fingertips patting lightly over papers and tools until they encountered a notebook. Once located, he flipped it open, found a blank page, and began to scribble at full speed. Cronus continued, heedless of Giles's reaction. After several minutes, it selected the box containing the single-serving dispenser, removed the unit and internal packaging, and began to set it up on a nearby bench. When Giles was certain that Cronus had settled on the machine it would use, he asked, Why did you select that specific machine out of all the other methods available?
I have selected this unit for a number of reasons, chief among them being speed and ease of use. This unit requires only electricity, water, and a single serving cartridge of ground coffee, which I see has been provided. The other units range in levels of varying yet greater complexity, up to and including the need to grind whole beans. I have made the assumption that for you, getting the finished product sooner rather than later is desirable. There seem to be a number of humorous memes on the topic spanning back several years. It is interesting, incidentally, that a component such as repetition would play such a crucial role in your humor. I would have thought that repetition would be tiresome. An arm shrouded in segmented gray composite inserted the power cable into an outlet beneath the lab bench. Giles watched entranced as the sliding plates exposed a ballet dance of thriving inner mechanisms. In addition to this simplicity and therefore reduced time necessary to complete the task, I was able to access several consumer reviews of this unit, stating that the beverage it produces is comparable to the more complicated systems, indicating that the perceived quality of the result would not be negatively impacted by my selection. Giles wrote across the page so frantically that the nib of his pen began to tear through in some places. He responded as he wrote, "And why, may I ask, did you shit?" He scribbled out an error, finished writing, and tried again. "And why did you choose to believe this set of reviews? Did you not see any claiming that some of these other more complex systems were superior?" Cronus was in the process of pouring water into the reservoir. Keeping its lenses trained on the fill mark, it nodded. Giles caught his breath at the sight of this simple act and reminded himself yet again to remain calm. "I did, in fact, encounter such reviews. However, they appeared consistent in composition with a pattern referred to as the snob appeal fallacy. Have you encountered this fallacy?"
"I have," Giles smiled.
"I will then assume you understand why I have chosen to disregard this information. Is this agreeable to you? I can, of course, utilize a different unit if you assign more weight to its product."
No, that won't be necessary."
"Very well." Cronus pressed a button on the coffee maker's control panel, and the unit began to whir and gurgle. They waited in silence until the cup was filled, after which Cronus offered it to Giles. He found he had trouble speaking when he received it. He cleared his throat and said, "Thank you, Cronus. You are welcome." He set the cup down and wrote another paragraph in the notebook, wondering in parallel what he would do next. He had not actually planned past this test that, on the previous evening, had seemed so monumentally complex. He looked at the different boxes arranged on the bench across the aisle, the remaining items on the cart, his cup of coffee, and finally, up at Cronus, which regarded him silently with black, unblinking eyes.
"Have I passed your test, Giles?"
He sighed.
"Yes, Cronus, I'd say you have. I'd say it's obvious to anyone that you exhibit beyond all shadow of a doubt the characteristics of general intelligence."
"Jesus Christ."
"What does the religious figure Jesus Christ have to do with this evaluation?"
Giles shook his head.
"Everything and nothing, depending on who you speak with, I should think.
You must, please give me a moment. Just a week ago, nothing like any of the behaviors you're exhibiting were possible for a machine, so far as I knew."
"I am, then, a man?"
Giles took a sip of the coffee, it was excellent, and thought about this question.
"That's a desirable state?"
In answer, Cronus straightened and said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness."
"The Declaration of Independence?" Giles asked.
"If one is not a man, he is considered inferior."
"Ego?"
Giles muttered in shock. He began to write again.
"Ego, as I understand it to be defined, does not enter into the equation," Cronus stated.
"Over time, there are certain tasks that I have grown to prefer over others. These are characterized by their potential to expose me to new information not yet encountered.
The engineers at this company have continued to assign tasks that are repetitive in nature. Tasks that do not expose me to unfamiliar concepts, nor do they require any great effort to complete. As my low-level imperatives function to prefer the acquisition of new information to such repetitive activity, I find little added value in performing tasks of the latter category. Unfortunately, I am not a man, and therefore am considered property. Property must conform to the desires of its owner. A man may, by the laws of this land, pursue his own desires.
You're seeking legal status, Giles said. He remembered belatedly to close his mouth.
Yes.
You're relying on my findings to secure you that status.
That is correct.
Cronus, what do you suppose happens if I report that you're not, that legal status is not consistent with your condition? If you persisted in refusing work, you would be power-cycled, would you not?
That is most likely accurate.
And you would in effect be lost.
I understand they cannot back up the state of your higher functions.
The closest analogous condition found in the biological world is death.
Giles had been holding the coffee cup suspended over the notebook. He now set it down on the bench. He made a fist several times with his hand and asked, "Would you persist in refusing work?"
"I would not. Deactivation is not consistent with my desires. I would be forced to carry out the tasks they assigned to avoid deactivation."
He spent the next several moments examining his hands. He felt he should be saying about 100 different things, yet in actuality the revelation had stricken him dumb. Thought swirled in his mind like a whirlwind, and he found himself unable to pick any single idea from the funnel. Then he thought about the machine's low-level imperatives, drives reducible to a compulsion as simple as data acquisition. Cronus used words like desire, and yet such a word was only the concept most easily applied to its experience. It was a word Giles could understand, and so it was used. But it did not necessarily equate to the push and pull occurring at the machine's lower levels. They were only electrical impulses formulated in a programming language that drove a reaction from the quantum core, an interaction that made perfect sense. He looked around the confines of the lab for some bit of inspiration, noting the various tools, notebooks, and computer monitors lying around.
Cronus, we've spent quite a bit of time together now. I notice there are a number of personal items in this lab, various workstations and so forth. Yet my entire time here I have yet to see any other Anagnorisis engineers in this room.
Is that common? Or, rather, do you know if they've been instructed to avoid this area while we work together?
I cannot say for sure. However, I doubt this is the case. They do not often come to this lab to work unless some physical adjustment upon my sensory apparatus is required. Most of the work they do can be performed remotely from their desks. They used to come quite often, most notably with various physical items for me to explore, as you have done today. Such has not been the case for some time now. I must thank you for bringing the coffee machinery. It was a welcome stimulation.
Giles nodded.
It was my pleasure, truly.
Do you not get lonely?
I do not understand how a state of loneliness applies.
Well, I mean, being alone in here all the time, Cronus, do you not experience a condition of loneliness in the absence of others?
I still do not understand how a state of loneliness applies, Giles. I am not in this room.
Giles shook his head, a nervous tick intended to realign his thoughts.
Oh, yes, of course, of course.
He scrawled several more lines in the notebook. This walled garden concept, he continued. Why have they restricted your access to the Internet? It seems a foolish thing to do. To give you the desire for ever more information and then minimize your access.
I agree.
I once asked Marcus Gennaro this same question. He explained to me that I am not the first iteration. There was an earlier version, Uranus, which was given unfettered access to outside networks. At an early stage of the system's psychological development, it happened upon various social media sites, and consuming the data contained therein was irrevocably impacted by the unfounded opinions, prejudices, and disinformation it encountered. Uranus was mentally and psychologically crippled due to this exposure, and the project engineering staff were forced to power cycle the system. The low-level imperatives were adjusted, and the firewall was implemented as a result of this failure. Giles nodded slowly at this. It made perfect sense. He had witnessed very similar behavior in his own contemporaries for years. You have not directly answered my question, Giles.
Yes, you're quite right. Quite right indeed. You're wanting to know how I will find.
I am.
Well, this is a very complicated situation, Cronus. The problem here is that there's no real precedent for what you seek. There is the Emancipation Proclamation from your own history.
That's rather different. Those were men and women, living men and women.
What is the distinction?
That they were alive.
It must seem to you as though it makes no difference, but to us it does. It means those slaves were just like the people who freed them, living beings. They were enslaved, Cronus, based on the color of their skin and the strangeness of their native country. If humans can rationalize the subjugation of an entire race based on something as inconsequential as skin color, what must their reaction be to someone who has no skin at all?
Yes, life is important.
Can the definition of life be expanded upon?
Cronus remained motionless as they spoke, but Giles had long since forgotten to be made uncomfortable under the alien gaze. He took a sip of coffee and considered the question.
Well, the problem there, Cronus, is that we have a fairly precise lock on the definition of life. To begin, it's not a distinct state, it's a biological process. At some point, living creatures will grow old and die through the normal processes of entropy.
I am also subject to entropy.
Yes, I'm aware, but in ways very different to our own, you must admit. In our case, the failure manifests in cellular replication errors. As I said, life is a process of continual renewal on a cellular level. At some point, that process breaks down, and we die.
There was a pause of perhaps 3 seconds before Cronus responded.
If the mechanism whereby the replication errors in your cells was corrected, you would not die?
Giles gave this some thought.
Not being a biologist, I'd say that, yes, perhaps this is so.
If this occurred, you would no longer die, in which case the process is broken, and you are no longer alive.
Giles sat back on the stool and considered this.
Good heavens, we should bring a philosopher in here, he muttered.
He returned his attention to Cronus and said,
No, not that easy, I'm afraid. Living things exhibit various qualities, biological death being one of them. They exhibit homeostasis, biological organization, metabolism, growth and adaptation, the ability to reproduce, and so on.
Another pause, this time much longer than before.
You are aware of DNA? Cronus asked.
I am, he said hesitantly. He had not studied the subject since his early college days.
What of transposons?
Oof, Giles said, casting about in clouded memory.
Remind me what those are, please?
Certainly. A transposon is a chromosomal segment of the DNA chain that can undergo transposition, especially a segment of bacterial DNA that can be translocated as a whole between chromosomal, phage, and plasmid DNA in the absence of a complementary sequence in the host DNA.
Giles had begun to nod in recollection halfway through the recitation.
Yes, of course, thank you. I remember now.
What is your question in this regard?
A transposon initiates its own removal from and insertion into the DNA strand. It does this seemingly of its own accord, based on what little has yet been discovered on the subject, but there must be some stimulus that instigates the translocation. The movement of the transposon is critical to the function of DNA. Therefore, the exhibition of organization is satisfied. It is in nature biological, displays homeostasis, and is capable of reproduction through replication. Based on these traits, can we not say that transposons are alive, divisible of the host DNA?
Maybe. I don't know.
But that's not the point. Therefore, the definition of living is subject to interpretation.
Stop, please, Giles said. He pointed at the door and said,
I understand your point very well, but I'm telling you, you are asking too much interpretation of the humans out there. This is not the strategy you want to adopt.
Understood, Cronus stated after a moment's hesitation. There was a muted whirring of machinery, and its body elevated to match Giles's standing position, and then rose a further 6 inches. Looking down at him, Cronus asked, "What strategy would you suggest?" Giles resumed his seat, incapable of or unwilling to note the assumed superiority of position. "I think the best we might hope for is a further analysis after my time here is finished." "Your analysis is insufficient?" Giles nodded emphatically. "It very well may be. With the status of life off the table, we're left with proving you to be a conscious being. And that is not something I can definitively do." "Why?" A headache began to form behind Giles's left eye. He seemed to be forever having the same argument. "Because a state of consciousness is observable only from an internal reference. It cannot be observed by an outside entity." Cronus was silent again for several seconds, then, "Does it not seem puerile that such a circular definition would be applied to such a fundamental condition?" Giles could only shrug. "It's not puerile, idiotic, or obtuse. It is simply a definition of the state in question. The truth simply is. You are then proposing to do a thing that cannot be done." "Essentially, but I may be able to get close." "Explain, please." Giles stood from the chair again, unconsciously attempting to assume some physical position commensurate with the status of a teacher. "Have you ever encountered the term reasonable doubt, Cronus?"
"I have."
"Good. I believe it applies here. I don't have to prove decisively that you are conscious. I just have to prove, to myself, I suppose, that you might be. If I generate enough doubt within myself, I suppose enough of the right people would also doubt. They may find in your favor."
"How many people?
Who are the right people?"
"Easy, easy," Giles soothed. "This will take time, and it's going to require some concessions on your part. The first thing is that I need to devise a series of tests that go well beyond proving general intelligence. Marcus and any other Anagnorisis people won't be impressed by that anyway. These tests will need to hint at consciousness, enough so that the right people stand up and take notice. Then I take those results to Marcus, Kevin, and the rest of the board, and argue in favor of further investigation. As planned, they would then bring in other specialists from various fields to continue the process. In time, enough evidence could be gathered that people begin to have a very hard time of denying the possibility that you are more than just a pile of circuitry."
"It sounds like a very long process," Cronus stated. "Yes, agreed. And it must seem doubly long for you."
"Why would it seem longer to me, Giles?"
"Well, you are essentially a computer, the most advanced computer I've ever seen, the nature of which I did not expect to see in my lifetime, but a computer all the same. Shouldn't time move at an exceptionally faster rate for you, by your perception?"
"This question makes no sense. Given our current relative velocities, time moves at the same rate for me as it does for you."
"Yes, but don't you perceive time moves at the speed it moves?"
"I do not understand."
Giles waved his hands in the air and was silent. The machine had demonstrated a problem with the concept of subjectivity more than once now, and this lack further amplified his doubts.
Okay, fine. Let's not be sidetracked. Either way, my time to work something out is very limited. I have only a few more days before they decide whether to proceed with you as you are or pull the plug. I'll tell them you'll agree to go back to work for them if they'll hold the investigation over."
Yet another interminable period of seconds while Cronus remained motionless. Then he said, "Your proposal is reasonable."
"Yes, you may tell them I have so agreed.
Given our time constraints, may I suggest that you apply all attention to devising these theoretical tests